Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, but still you always pick me up whenever I will call. We humbly bow before you, we love to praise and adore you. We humbly bow before the throne. We give you all the glory, salvation is our story. We humbly bow before the throne.
I offer up myself to you, protected by your hand. My dreams and schemes and all I have is surrendered to your plan. I know that I'm inadequate, I stumble and I fall, still you always pick me up whenever I will call. We humbly bow before you, we love to praise and adore you.
Tonight's topic is about the roots and functions of globalism and its purpose versus trying to keep nations at bay within a nationalistic mindset, and what Trump is trying to project by America First and why it's not working. We will also discuss the Book of Daniel and Revelation as it applies to the crowns of Europe, and where John was discussing last night, where he thinks the roots of globalism is going to produce the spirit of the Antichrist, and I will get into that philosophy later. Albert's on the line, and I'm going to start off by playing a clip from the TED Talks. This person that I'm going to be highlighting tonight is an Israeli, and he is discussing what the function of the new globalism is. One moment, please.
Hello. So, welcome to this TED Dialogue, the first of a series that's really been done in response to the current political upheaval. I don't know about you, I've become quite concerned about the growing divisiveness in this country and in the world. No one's listening to each other, right? They aren't. But it feels like we need a different kind of conversation, one that's based on, I don't know, on reason, listening, on understanding, on a broader context. That's at least what we're going to try in these TED Dialogues starting today. And we couldn't have anyone with us who I'd be more excited to kick this off. This is a mind right here that thinks pretty much like no one else on the planet. I would hasten to say. I'm serious. He synthesizes history with underlying ideas in a way that kind of takes your breath away. So some of you will know this book, Sapiens. Has anyone here read Sapiens? I mean, I could not put it down. The way that he tells the story of mankind through big ideas that really make you think differently about it, it's kind of amazing. And here's the follow-up, which I think is being published in the U.S. next week.
Yes, next week.
Homo Deus. Now, this is the history of the next 100 years. I had a chance to read it. It's extremely dramatic, and I dare say for some people quite alarming. It's a must-read. And honestly, we couldn't have someone better to help make sense of what on earth is happening in the world right now. So a warm welcome, please, to Yuval Noah Harari. Great to be joined by our friends on Facebook and around the web. Hello, Facebook. And all of you, as I start asking questions of Yuval, come up with your own questions, not necessarily about the political scandal du jour, but about the broader understanding of where are we heading. You ready? Okay, we're going to go. So here we are, Yuval, New York City, 2017. There's a new president in power and shockwaves rippling around the world. What on earth is happening?
I think the basic thing that happens is that we have lost our story. Humans think in stories, and we try to make sense of the world by telling stories. And for the last few decades, we had a very simple and very attractive story about what's happening in the world. And the story said that, what's happening is that the economy is being globalized, politics is being liberalized, and the combination of the two will create paradise on earth. And we just need to keep on globalizing the economy and liberalizing the political system, and everything will be wonderful. And 2016 is the moment when a very large segment, even of the Western world, stopped believing in this story. For good or bad reason, doesn't matter. People stopped believing in the story. And when you don't have a story, you don't understand what's happening.
Mm. I mean, part of you believes that that story was actually a very effective story. It was.
To some extent, yes. I mean, according to some measurements, we are now in the best time ever for humankind. Today, for the first time in history, more people die from eating too much than from eating too little, which is an amazing achievement. Also, for the first time in history, more people die from old age than from infectious diseases. And violence is also down. For the first time in history, more people commit suicide than are killed by crime and terrorism and war put together. Statistically, you are your own worst enemy. At least from all the people in the world, you're most likely to be killed by yourself. Which is, again, very good news compared to the level of violence that we saw in previous eras.
But this process of connecting the world ended up with a large group of people kind of feeling left out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've reacted, and so we have this bombshell that's sort of ripping through the whole system. I mean, how do you make of what's happened? It feels like the old way that people thought of politics, you know, the left-right divide, has been blown up and replaced. How should we think of this?
Yeah, the old 20th century political model of left versus right is now largely irrelevant. And the real divide today is between global and national, or global or local. And you see it, again, all over the world, that this is now the main struggle. We probably need completely new political models and completely new ways of thinking about politics. In essence, what you can say is that we now have global ecology, we have a global economy, but we have national politics. And this doesn't work together. This makes the political system ineffective because it has no control over the forces that shape our life. And you have basically two solutions to this imbalance. Either deglobalize the economy and turn it back into a national economy, or globalize the political system. So,
so some, I guess many liberals out there view Trump and his government.
So with that just basic premise, either globalize the economy and globalize national political structures or vice versa, what I'm trying to say in this episode is that Trump wants to put America back in a box. He wants to make America prominent in the world, but in my opinion, it's at the expense of others, because the Chinese are already working for low wages to produce many products for us, and yet he perceives that tariff and trade balance is improper. There's no American that would work $30 a day to produce products for our country, and they're receiving products from us too, but now Trump is creating a situation where he is at odds with most of the major leadership in the world. He just insulted the Danish president the other day in her response to selling Greenland. He's trying to provoke a deal with China and trade and tariff just recently this week at the G7 summit, but at the same time, he only wants to do it on his terms. And his concept of globalism is to only make the world work for America, and that's a false sense of security and also prominence. Everybody should be working equally together for a better world as a whole. I'm going to pull in Albert. Hi, Albert.
Okay.
How are you doing this evening?
Not much, just chilling.
Yeah, basically, we did have an episode last night in which John was trying to equate nationalism with a sort of surrogate protection of what the future world might be like when the Antichrist comes upon the earth, and that's part of the biblical revelation prophecy saying that when the Ten Crowns put forth their guided leadership, which most Christians believe is Europe, that there will be a spirit of the Antichrist, and he was trying to equate a one-world government as a evil that's going to proliferate into a final battle with Armageddon. Now, I know this is kind of heavy thinking, but at the root of it is that he's saying the very function of a globalistic world in which national authority would probably dissolve, is evil in itself. What is your opinion on a collective problem-solving body regarding globalism, the economy, and how the world works? What's your opinion?
Well, you know, I heard the you know, the radio speaking about the audio you had playing right there and then talking. Those statistics they were trying to put out there were ridiculously non-provable and them saying that that more people are dying from overeating than undereating, like, you know, it's ridiculous. It's the most ridiculous thing
I think what his main thrust was is that we've gotten to a point in the world, at least first world nations, where we have an ample supply of food, and that our own worst enemy is ourselves. That's only true in the first world, though. Like, there's still people suffering all over the world in places like South America,
yeah.
Central America.
There's a lot of third world countries and a lot of
violence.
Yeah, there's a lot of third world countries and lots of people starving. I mean, if they actually would look exactly how many, there's a lot of people starving, you know. And, you know, and we throw away a lot of food anyways, you know. So overeating is not really a realistic taxes of people actually dying from overeating, you know. I mean, you never heard of anybody just blowing up a gut or you know, or something, or or you know what I mean? It just,
well,
you know,
there are
people.
You know what though, Albert? I know at least 10 people in my own city where there.
Wait,
I know a few
finish.
People who are even 300 pounds.
Hold on, if you let me finish. Yeah, so you can't literally die from overeating, but you can die slowly by eating the wrong stuff. Like if you eat too much greasy food with, you know, you eat a lot of sugar and a lot of fat, and, you know, you're not eating healthy and properly, then yes, you know, you will get fat, you will be unhealthy, you know what I mean? But, yeah, I mean, you can't overeat from eating healthy stuff, you know what I mean? You can't die from overeating healthy stuff. You just, you know what I mean? It just doesn't really happen.
Well,
you know, you would vomit before you eat.
That was kind of like his introduction. But what did you think of his main thrust of nationalism versus globalism? Like, when Trump is always chanting America first, what do you think of that?
I don't agree with them. I don't think their touch are based on realistic. It's based on, you know, from their position, I guess. But they don't have a touch and a position from, like, you know, being like, living in a third world country, starving. Or I don't think they ever have been in a situation where they starved, where they've been starving themselves, you know. Because, you know, like I said, from what they said. But anyways, yeah, you know, I mean, my own point of view, from what other people's opinions, everybody should be, have the freedom to put their own opinions, but you want to put your own opinion, but you, at the same time, you don't want to try to control other people's thought process. You don't want to, like, you know, influence, you know what I mean? Like, you could put it on your opinions, but if you're trying to influence, you know, thousands or millions of people with your own opinion, then you're doing it wrong. If you really want to put your own opinion, it's from your own free, you know, inner thought, you know, like your real feelings, what you really feel, but not what you want to make everybody else, you know what I mean? Because, you know, people in power and people with, you know, they can broadcast and have a lot of listeners. You know, they kind of have a responsibility on what they're saying if there's a lot of people hearing them, because they have a strong influence, especially if they're very famous and popular and a lot of people are following their, what they say is influence on other people's thought. Not everybody's gonna be influenced, of course, but, you know, some people that are listening. So yeah, you know.
Verses in the book of Daniel that mentions the empires throughout the history of the world. And I'm going to start with this prophecy. The Bible warns that the final empire on earth right before the Christ appears will be the reunited Roman Empire of strong nations mixed with weak nations, iron mixed with clay. Whereas you saw the feet and toes partly of clay and partly of iron, the kingdom of Rome shall be divided, now reuniting as modern Europe. And as the toes and feet were partly of iron and partly of clay, the reunited kingdom shall be partly strong and partly fragile. Daniel 9:41-43. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast, Satan's Antichrist, right, that's the paraphrase, rising up out of the sea, having 7 heads and 10 horns. And on his horns were 10 crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Their Aragon gave him power to his throne and with great authority. That's in Revelation 13:1-2. The 10 horns are 10 kings who shall arise out of the kingdom of the Roman Empire. Hold on, it froze. Are you there, Albert? I am going to cut to music in a minute after I'm done reading this so I can get a hold of him.
Oh, I'm here.
Then I stood on the... are you here?
Yeah, I'm here.
Since you're the only other co-host, you have to... I did hear you talk just now. So what I'm trying to say is that we're talking about the 10 nations that will rise out of ancient Roman Empire, which happens to be Europe. And I just want to mention what kingdoms these are. Galicia, sometimes France was called Gaul before it became France. Hispania, which is now Spain. Britannia, which is now England, Italia, and then the Greece area, which was called Illyrium, and Germania was on the flanking the other side of these 10 nations. Greece, Turkey, Egypt, and the northern Mediterranean. So what our argument was about last night is globalism going to provoke these 10 nations from taking the world over into a one world government? So I just want to read one more verse. The dragon has 7 heads and 10 horns on its head and 7 diadems, which are crowns. The dragon in this scenario is Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. Now, all the ones I mentioned before were great kingdoms before Rome became great. Then in Revelations 13:1-3, they're identifying Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, and the future empire. Now, since then, Iraq, Babylon, and Assyria have crumbled. And that was pretty much at the hands of the United States, and Syria self-crumbled. So whether, and Europe has abandoned Christianity, over 50% of their population. So is, Albert, do you think globalism is a negative force in our world that's going to make nations crumble, or do you think it's a positive collective idea that can strengthen the world?
Obviously, you know, we're not going to agree with everybody says. I mean, especially in this show, right? We never agree on each. We never agree on everything.
It's not
on each
about
other.
Agreeing. I'm just asking your opinion right now.
Yeah. No, it is about globalism, because globalism is about agreeing, right? If you taking over the whole planet, the whole world, you know, and your thought process is way different than the majority, you know, then you're not going to have very happy people that are being ruled by you, right? So being, there's no perfect... system, of course, capitalism, socialism, fascism, they're all not perfect in itself. I mean, socialism had some good points, but they were ruined by you know, some people, they just made them look really bad.
You mean how they keep putting it down in the media when Bernie and Warren speak?
They keep putting down, adding things, and now to a point where socialism has a lot of different meanings, and nobody knows exactly, nobody has a one answer to socialism, because the mainstream media puts a lot of hate to it and a lot of different, and then so you got a lot of different views on it. But, my take is just forget any capitalism or communism, socialism, or fascism. Just have your own system, because whatever system you make, it's gonna get pummeled, it's gonna get changed. When you say something, remember somebody else is gonna hear it and then say it different, and then all of a sudden it's all completely different than what you're saying. Look at the this is called from the Venus Project.
I have heard of that.
Well, the Venus Project is by John Gerard. It's really hard for me to pronounce the name, but anyways, he had a system and plan that would work for everybody, and he called it an economy system, which is basically what it says, right? And based on the It's a resource-based economy. Yeah, that's what he said. Resource-based economy. A resource-based economy by the Venus Project. I saw his documentaries. And, he has good ideas, and it's basically like socialism. But it's not the socialism that the mainstream media talks about. Resource-based economy is really unique, and it's really a great idea if you hear it from his words. Now, if you hear it from somebody else,
We have Ben on the line, but why don't you explain a little bit about what you think it means?
Okay.
What is it projecting?
Well, it's kind of in projecting independency, like in the socialism way, where things are equal and stuff like that. But, but it's kind of more independent based on, globalism. It's kind of like the opposite of globalism, but giving more freedom to individuals or rather to, big powerhouses, big.
So like to kind of avoid the thinking of organizational thinking and only just think about the impact of the individual?
Yeah, basically, yeah. The impact of the visional, and it kind of seems the organization that it frowns upon the own organizations that are trying to, especially ones that try to take too much power,
Okay, I'm going to pull Ben in and see what he has to say tonight. I've already spoke to him once. So before I do that, I'm just going to click on this quick, the Venus Project, because he's probably heard of it too. The Venus Project is a nonprofit organization that presents a new socioeconomic model utilizing science and technology towards social betterment to achieve a sustainable civilization of abundance for all without exception. So I know that Europe does stuff like this, like they even in the countries that are cold 6 months out of the year, like in Denmark, they grow a lot of food that could not be grown unless it was in a greenhouse. They're interested in distributing food to countries that have hunger and that type of trade. I'm going to pull Ben in. Hi, Ben. Have you heard of the Venus Project?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I haven't studied it.
Yeah. So tonight, so far, we've only been on the air about 30 minutes, actually. That's surprising. Well, I played a clip by a Jewish guy who wrote a book called, he wrote one book called Homo, one was called Sapiens, and the other one was called Homo Deus, D-E-U-S, kind of about how each country kind of evolves out of their own story and how people, they can relate to stories around the world. But now we've come into a situation where people want a global ecology and a global economy, but they want to cling to their national patriotism and identities, and how that clash of leadership doesn't coincide with a global economy. So he was kind of just talking about how the new style of politics, like the systems have to be changed in order for things to be effective.
Well, a resource.
So what's your take on globalism versus nationalism and where we stand? And is Trump, by Trump promoting the idea of America first all the time, is he just trying to protect us and strengthen us, or is he trying to do it at the expense of other nations?
Well, that's a loaded question. One part of that is, yes, we have poverty in our country, and it's caused by a lot of different things. One of the things is that our manufacturing is gone, and our money is being devalued and inflated like crazy because getting back to resource-based economy, that's basically what we had when our money was tied to gold and silver, and now it's not. Now that it's tied to oil and contracts for production, it can be manipulated by banks a lot easier, so that leaves a lot of people out and poor. And because we have cheap things in Walmart, the poorest people are actually funding more poor people. Because it's like a catch-22. They're trapped in a situation where they can't afford to pay more for things that are made in the U.S. that are better quality. So they're buying cheap things that actually their money is sponsoring more imports, and it doesn't put Americans to work. So it's like the poor is driving the poor to be more poor, and the banks are helping it.
Well, do you think manufacturing could come back full force in this country?
Well, that's why you're seeing such an outcry from people about what Trump's doing. Trump's trying to put tariffs. He's trying to level the playing field between trade so that U.S. goods can be more comparable in price. It's gonna make the prices go up for everything. But once the prices go up and people have a easier choice whether or not to buy foreign or domestic, then it'll start to
level
out.
But on some levels, isn't it working? Like, I was telling Albert at the beginning, for the average Chinese, let's say they get paid $30 a day in American equivalency, they work their ass off in a factory for 10 hours. Aren't we benefiting from those cheap costs? Like, I saw a father and a daughter, 8-year-old girl in Walmart today. She bought 10 leggings, 4 shirts, 5 notebooks, and a bunch of other school supplies, and about 30 pairs of socks. It came to $162. And for their economy, they probably got a good deal.
What I said before, though, that money leaves the U.S. That money goes out of the U.S. Every time you save money buying things that are imported from China, you are sending your money overseas. And if you spend more on something that was made in the U.S., and I'm not trying to be hypocritical. I've bought cheap stuff before, too. But I'm saying that the cycle that was caused by having a cheaper option, all of that stuff takes more diesel fuel. All that stuff gets sent over here across an ocean or in a plane, across an ocean, and we export coal, and then we talk about how dirty the environment is. So it's like we're spending more fuel, whether it's coal, natural gas, for their factories, and we're still buying this stuff and then criticizing the environment being dirty. So it's like we're putting regulations on ourselves where it's not cost effective for us to have factories, but we're buying it from factories and paying for the fuel to
right.
get it here at
the
same
transportation.
Time.
Transportation. I have a question for both you and Albert. There were three one thing is general and two things happened this week. The first general statement I have is that even when I lived in Stoughton, Wisconsin 20 years ago, and there was one giant Walmart in town and it was taken away from the local businesses. Like when I lived in Victorville, California, it was the same thing. Walmart was the overshadowing retailer in all these cities. In fact, in Duluth, Minnesota, it's practically the only survivor. Sears closed, Kmart closed, Shopko closed. The only thing left is Walmart, JCPenney, and Kohl's. So that type of invasion of Walmart has pervaded a lot of cities. And my second two question is, why did Trump skip the opening ceremony of the G7 summit when he said he was had late-running meetings with Angela Merkel and another European leader? And I forgot the third question. I'll just leave it out in the open for now. Then Trump said this week that he was trying to renegotiate with China, and he seems to be wanting... And the French President Macron tried to set up a meeting with Rouhani from Iran and Trump. So do you guys think this
France
week is
wants
significant?
The oil.
Pardon?
Of course it is. Of course it is. France really wants the oil, and they want the U.S. and Iran to work out their differences so they can get their oil without being punished, because in order to be an ally of the U.S., you have to abide by the sanctions on the countries that you trade with. So the U.S. puts a sanction on Iran.
Well, I heard
Iran
that all of Europe still wants the Iranian deal that Trump dismantled.
Well, they buy their fuel from there, so it's hurting them too. So it puts pressure on Iran to actually make a deal and get on the phone with Trump instead of making threats.
Okay, so why did, and Albert, did you want to comment on the pervasiveness of Walmart in every major and minor city in America and how you think that affects the American lifestyle and small businesses?
Walmart's a big corporation, and we sell a lot of cheap stuff, and a lot of the stuff that's from made in other countries and brought you by other countries, and it's true. You have no choice. You want to buy stuff that's made in America, or you can't afford it. You just can't. So it's just unknown. You're just going around circles. You're trying, but you can't. The poor people have no options when it comes to picking what they buy. They have to buy what they can afford.
They go to the Dollar Tree too, in the 99-cent store.
Yeah, but the Dollar Tree is not going to have all your essentials that Walmart could have.
Well, I think people.
Do you think?
Would you guys consider Walmart a necessary evil?
No. No, if I don't. But do you think it would be helpful if people that were on federal assistance were only allowed to spend the federal assistance money on U.S. goods, domestic goods? Because I think it would actually keep our...
Well, that's a hard question to answer, because like in Minnesota, if you have one child and you're a single female parent or male, you get $520 a month. And the only people who really can survive on that are people on Section 8. So, of course, they're going to go to Walmart, the Dollar Tree, and the 99-cent store. But if they have to pay, let's just say, a 25% markup for all those everyday products, they're going to resent it. Like, I think it would be a major, it would be a big deal to modify that shopping. I don't want to call it a lifestyle, but it would be a big change for a lot of people, and they won't want to pay more.
I know, but what I'm saying is that we are taxing people at high rates to pay for all the socialist programs that we have. And then at the same time, they're going to the poorest people of our country who are faced with an option of buying the cheaper things. And that money that was taken out of you and I's paycheck to go to help people, that money is being sent overseas every time somebody makes a cheap purchase. You see what I mean?
It well, would I never actually thought keep of it that money, way. When know, I think one thing I thought about, like regarding the poor, is that let's say you give 20,000 people in a city of 150,000 welfare benefits, and they take that $500 to $600 a month and they go spend it on the local economy. On one hand, it's costing us a lot of tax money, but on the other hand, even if they're poor and not working, they're still stimulating the economy. But now that you say that they're taking the money, a lot of the money that Walmart produces is being taken out of the country to go back to pay China, then it does seem like kind of a waste.
Right. And I.
But Walmart is an American-based company.
Yeah, they have headquarters here and they have storefronts here, but they don't manufacture a damn thing.
Well,
they import.
Well, they also employ a lot of people. Did you think of that?
They employ people to sell things from other places. So they're basically
Well, do you
just
think
a,
Walmart is good for America? Because I think in some ways Walmart's more powerful than probably the people in the Federal Reserve Board. I mean, they have a lot of power in a sense.
Well, maybe they would be better for our country if they had more made in the U.S. stickers on things. I think if they actually went out and not necessarily found the cheapest deal, but maybe the better quality things, and they would offer
more.
Well,
I think our country could go back to that, but it would hurt poor people's pocketbooks. And secondly, are we willing to do that? I know I've heard a lot of thing about plastics and how we have to reduce our use of plastics. So maybe we should go back to wood products and stuff like that.
People keep buying it and throwing it away.
What I'm saying
yeah.
is like the plastic stuff can't be biodegradable and break down or whatever they call it.
The mass
I don't
producers
know,
are the ones that make the choice. You know, the ones at the top that mass produce, you know, they're the ones that make the toys. They can just get rid of all the plastic and the wood. I mean, they basically monopolize the, you know, most of the products. So they have the choice to change it if they want to. You know, but when you look down to the poor, they don't have a choice. They just got to buy whatever's cheaper.
Well, also I overheard Trump say this week he was going to invoke a 1977 rule saying that Americans must leave China, and that, like, Mattel is very heavily vested in China, and the kids want their Mattel products the way they are. I just don't see it happening, Ben, in the next 20 years, but I don't see Walmart not importing foreign things.
Well, so this is what Trump's been saying ever since he was campaigning. You have to put a hurt on China in order for us to actually come back from where we were. So one or the other of us economies is going to have to suffer a little bit. Putting tariffs on the cheap stuff is going to make kind of like make a vacuum in our marketplace for U.S. importing or U.S. Products and exporting. Right now, exporting is like it's difficult for the U.S. because the other countries have got it all on lockdown, and it is a lot of it has to do with people here making decisions just to have headquarters here and make the big decisions and say which country can make the product the cheapest, even including the shipping costs. They're going to outsource it to the cheapest place. Now, if they have tariffs slapped for importing, sending things across oceans and stuff, that's going to make the people in the high rises in Chicago that make these decisions, they're going to start looking locally. I mean, domestically, they'll say, well, you know, to import these toys from China, it's going to cost this much, but with the tariffs, it's going to be exactly as much as, you know, this factory with the same toy here in the U.S. So then they're going to start making those transfers.
I do think the most important element of this discussion is the cost of the fossil fuels and transportation, because I heard on the news today that one of the lifts in the Great Lakes and the Lower Lakes, there was an apparatus that broke down and they had to close that waterway passage for like 30 to 60 minutes today, and how it was massively, even for like 3 or 4 hours, it was closing down the shipping lanes, and that 5 to 6 months out of the year, the Great Lakes don't have that, and how important it was and how much money they were losing. And eventually, if we ever have a fossil fuel crisis or another oil crisis, people have to think of the big picture that it's better to have a self-sustaining local economy than always depending on foreign goods.
That's true, because if war starts and China has the steel manufacturing connections and abilities, we're not going to be able to ask China to make us tanks immediately. Even, like, especially if we're gearing up
what
to go to war with China.
What kind of steel products do we make versus them now?
Well, that's one of the things that Trump did when he was in office, was look at the best things for the wall, and he decided against concrete and went with steel. And he's talking about firing back up our steel mills and aluminum mills.
Well, one thing up here in Minnesota a couple of years ago, in one of the political campaigns, the Senate and the Congress and even the state legislature, is that one of the rich Republican candidates up here was in favor of buying U.S. Chinese steel, where northern Minnesota taconite and iron ore mines produce a different type of grade of steel, but it's still steel. And I don't know if Pennsylvania has even 20% of what they used to have anymore. So my question is how much percent of world steel does the U.S. produce? Does anybody know?
I have no idea, but I know the market on steel production, a lot of it is recycled now.
Okay.
And China's been doing a lot of that. China actually buys a lot of our old cars. A lot of our old cars get crushed and sent over to China. And I think another place where they cut up old ships is Somalia. Like, they just drive the ships like full speed onto the beach, and then people cut them up.
That's interesting.
And our old battleships, our old Navy battleships that are decommissioned, they cut those into pieces and send them to China too.
Well, out where Albert lives, Albert, I don't know if you're in India or Palm Desert now, but what?
I'll try and call back in. I'm getting a call.
Okay, sure. Albert, out where you are, there's You know, like when people recycle bottles and cans? Well, I used to know someone in Riverside that he used to get like, I don't know if it was iron or steel, but he used to recycle things for money, and it had to do with something like iron or steel. It was business up there in Riverside, California.
We got some here in Coachella where they recycle, you know, iron, steel, and aluminum.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. My brain's not really wired for that tonight. But based on the conversation that Ben produced, he had to drop his call. Do you have any other thoughts related to this conversation?
Well, you know, the market produce and, you know, globalism and all the stuff we're talking about. You know, I mean, back to the not much of a choice. I mean, if you look at this, right, I mean, it costs a lot of money to be poor. Now, I'm saying this because when it comes to all banks, these are all banks, every bank you think of, whether they have it or they don't have it. If they don't have it, you don't have an option. And they do have, you have an option, but you can't afford the option because on the banks, you have to have a certain amount of money to actually save money. So if you don't have more than, let's just say, you don't have more than $2,000 to put in the bank, it's going to cost you like $50 a month. They're going to be charging like $20 or $50 a month to be storing your money. So if you're only storing like $300 or $400 or $500, it's going to cost you to store that money. Rather than if you have a lot of money to store in a bank, that won't cost you anything to store it, because they, you know, the bank will make interest of it. I mean, you won't lose any money from storing big money like that. So, and then another thing too,
I've kind of gone through a crisis like that myself right now. I terminated a relationship with a bank, and right now I only have a Green Dot Visa, which is a reloadable card. The good news is that you can use it as a checking account. Like I can get a direct deposit from one of my jobs on it. And also, there's no bank charges. So let's say I pay a credit card bill, but I forget to load money on it. I'm not going to get a $7.50 charge for that not going through, like an overdraft charge. But the bad news is I don't have a local bank to go to put my money in.
Yeah, so when it comes to
banks, do you
have
a regular bank that you associate your business with?
No, I don't have enough money to do that to be able to save money. But yeah, when it comes to banks, the more money you have, the more money you save. You know, the more you store in there, then you won't have to worry about those fees, those monthly fees, if you have more money to store. I do have a checking account where I get direct deposit. Let me pull it out here, actually. Hold on. Give me a minute.
Yeah, you
right
do.
Here.
Then that means you do have a regular bank account.
I
am going to sign up with US
Bank
again in about a month.
Yeah.
I'm just taking a break.
Sure. I have a Bank Mobile Vibe, which is a MasterCard by Bank Mobile Vibe. Now, right here, they charge me $5 a month. If I don't make more than $500 a month.
You don't use anything, right?
No. If I don't make more than $500, I gotta get at least because I get direct deposit through there, so I gotta get at least a direct deposit more than $500 a month. And so if I don't make that quota, if I only make $400 a month, then they charge me a $5 fee for the month. That's the rule. You can actually go to bank. You can go to bankmobilevibe.com, or I think it's – hold on, let me check the website here. Oh, yeah, bankmobilevibe.com. Yeah, if you go to bankmobilevibe.com and you read up on their contract, it says that you got to make at least more than $500 a month, or they're going to charge you $5 a month to have your checking account. So, you know,
And I have another job where I get paid to, checks. So this one I had direct deposit through some online jobs that I had. So some of these online jobs I wasn't making more than $500 a month. So I was being charged $5 a month just to have it open. So yeah. So that's another thing.
Yeah, my bank is similar. My online bank, my Green Dot, because I have direct deposit, they waived. I think the fee was $7.95 a month just to have it open. They waived that fee. If I didn't have direct deposit, I would have to pay $7.50 a month. But I also do. I load at least $1,000 to pay bills on it a month. So, and because it's also a 16-digit debit card, so it's a twofold purpose, and it's just fine the way it is.
It works just like
a regular bank. The only thing is I don't have a local bank that I can walk into and deposit money.
If you can afford to put a lot of bank in a month where you're not going to get money charges because you can afford enough to put, and you can afford to make enough where you're not going to get those money charges as well, if you can afford to do all that, then you're going to save money. And another thing, too, you're going to save money because of direct deposit, right? Especially, if you have a direct deposit to your checking account and your savings account. You don't have to spend. You don't have to go to Walmart
right.
And spend $4 or $5 to cash out your check.
My check is drawn on Wells Fargo. My main job, TBI, is drawn. It's drawn on Wells Fargo, so I just go to Wells Fargo, and did you know Wells Fargo charge, like for checks over $1,000, they charge $7.50. But since my company does so much business with them, that they don't charge me a fee when I cash my payroll check.
Well, you're actually when it comes to cashing checks. Obviously, if you get direct deposit, you're not spending any money. I mean, you have a checking. If you have a checking account, then you don't have to worry about those fees. But of course, now if you're cashing checks, the bigger the check is, the more money you're gonna save. So if you're getting, a $10,000 check because Walmart, and just like other, and Wells Fargo and the other bank, they also charge $8 too. But anything more than $1,000, they'll charge you an $8 fee to cash it out. So if you're getting,
well,
if
out
you're
here
getting,
it's $6. If it's
check,
under $1,000, it's $3 or $4. If it's over $1,000, it's $6.
Yeah. Well, actually, at Walmart, if it's less than $300. It's a $3 fee. If it's less than $500, it's a $3 fee. Now it's between $500 to $1,000. It's like $4 or $5 fee. And then if it's more than $1,000, it's a $8 fee. So basically, if you got a check that's $10,000, you're saving money. Even if you got a check for $1,000, you're saving
money.
Well,
I'm never
going to
have a $10,000 check.
Exactly. But if you're getting checks because if you're getting paid every 15 days, and let's just say you're getting $500 or $600 checks, you're gonna be spending more money to cash your checks versus those people. They're getting bigger checks, are actually saving more money if you look at the percentage wise. So, I got checks from a program. They send me a $30 check, and I still pay the $3 fee to cash out $30.
That really sucks.
So
you only get 27 out of the 30.
Exactly. I got $27.
You know that you can open a local bank account for $50? Like, especially if you belong to a credit union.
Yeah, you could, but
you don't have
to
go to.
Then there's going to be monthly fees. There's going to be monthly fees.
Well, one thing about you guys in California is you guys have a lot of check cashing stores. In Duluth, Minnesota, the only thing we have is Walmart and a place called the Money Exchange. Ben's back on the line. I'm going to pull him in. I just wanted to tell you guys, you're both on the line now. It's 11:57 in Minnesota, and I have school orientation at 8 a.m., so we're probably only going to go another 15 minutes or to a half hour. So,
yeah.
Hi, Ben.
So, of course, now that if I can just finish, it'll just take me 1 minute.
Sure,
to finish.
Go ahead.
So, yeah, so like we talked about the banking and the checking, if you have more money, you're going to save more money when you cash out your checks. If you have more money to put in the bank, you're going to save more money by not paying the monthly fees of your checking or saving.
That's true.
That stuff. Yeah, the more money you have, the more money you save.
I don't know what his phone.
Albert, something's going on with your phone. Oh, wait. Can you hear me pretty well right now?
Yeah. Yes, but you were cutting out.
So like I was saying, the more money you have, the more money you save when it comes to checking, banking, saving, and all that stuff. But also, too, when it comes to buying, the more you buy, the more you save. So, like, for instance, at Walmart, you know, buy two get one and get the second one at half price, right? If you buy one box of toilet paper, you get another box of toilet paper for half the price, right? So the more you buy, the more you save. But here's the problem with poor people, right? They don't have the option to buy more to save more. They can only buy with what little they can afford just to get through the week or the month, you know. So they don't have that option to buy more to save more money. So that's the problem too, about the more you buy, the more you save. But it doesn't work with poor people. So it actually costs more to be poor.
That's a smart business decision. If you think about it from the top down instead of looking at it from the bottom up, of course, whether you're a bank or some kind of a distributor or supplier, you're going to give the better cost to the bigger customers because it's more valuable to you. So if you have a bank and you have somebody with $15 in their checking account that constantly overdrafts, you're constantly covering for that person. And it's, of course, that's why they designed the fees. Every time you bounce a check or overdraft your account, they charge you as a penalty for doing that. Now, if you have somebody with $500,000 in their savings account, they're going to pay to keep that person from not choosing a different bank. They want that money because the bank doesn't just sit on your money and hold it. They use your money for investing. So they want more. They don't want somebody with $30 that always overdrafts. They have to pay their employees and their property, their leases. All of the regulations and everything that a corporation has to take into account. It's a numbers game, so they want people with more money.
Well, the banks actually create money out of thin air. They create money out of thin air because they don't have to give out loans. The money is created out of thin air to give out loans.
I wouldn't say it's created out of thin air. It's not really tangible. It's not like they loan you something real.
I know someone on disability who got an auto loan because she had a good credit score, but she was only making like $1,000 a month on her disability.
Let's just say the bank only has $10,000. But you ask for a $20,000 loan, they don't have that money, but they'll give you the loan anyways because they can generate it in their computers to give you that loan, even though they don't have that kind of money. So the bank.
They can't loan out more than what they have.
No, they could. Yes, they could. Yes, I promise you, I guarantee you, they could. They can loan out more than what they have. They do it all the time. It's creating money out of thin air. They can do it. It's a process.
Well, they're not going to give a $20,000 loan to somebody who makes less than $50,000 a year.
No, they have parameters. No, they're not giving big loans to small people that won't be able to afford it. No, of course not. No, they
No, they give loans to certain people that they know that they can know they can pay back. I know they'll be able to pay back. But yes, all banks.
But what I was saying
is,
I just have one more comment, then you guys can go ahead. I am in a 12-step meeting for people who had gambling addictions, and I know somebody in the group who's on disability. She's been on it for years, and she had like 3 high-interest loans in the town next to us because Wisconsin allows it and Minnesota doesn't. And they gave her a loan to cover those high-interest loans so she could pay them back with a low-interest loan, and she was only on disability, and they did it. But I'm assuming she had a pretty good credit score, even though she was on a fixed income.
Okay.
So in America, I know regarding the credit score system, you really have to F up. Most people with bad credit scores and stuff are people who blanked up on their own. They messed up.
It's easy to mess up. I just did it recently because a credit card payment didn't go through, and I didn't know it. So,
just one payment is going to screw up your credit score really bad?
Well, it did because I have one that's on automatic, so I don't even think about it. It just automatically pays itself with my bank account. It's fine. I don't have to think
right.
about it. But the other one, was difficult because I had to call and set up the maximum amount of payments, which was 2 or 3. I think it was either 2 or 3 payments ahead of myself every time. And I didn't remember which month I was on. And I think it went for 2 months without a payment. So they dinged me and they reported me to credit. And it brought my score back down. I had good credit before that. And it was my mistake.
I do think that automatic bill pay can be a pain in the ass because, like, I have 5 loans out right now that I'm still paying because of my gambling days. And, like, it just seems like every time my country financial insurance rolls around, it's always in a really bad time of the month. So what happens is sometimes they'll send the payment through on my prepaid. They'll send the payment through, and then it might bounce, but then I just call and give them the 16-digit credit card, debit card, and then I can pay it.
You don't have to give the name of your bank out on the radio.
I didn't. I gave out the name of my car insurance company.
Yeah, well,
Albert and I already discussed prepaid cards.
Yeah.
But
I didn't
give out the name of the bank. It was the insurance company. So I know I shouldn't be doing that anyway, but I guess the main thrust of this show tonight ended up becoming a little different flavor than we originally planned, but I do know that, well, let's just sum it up this way. There's a lot of convenience in the world right now. Like I was telling Albert, I have a 16-digit Visa that I pretty much pay 80% of my bills on, and it's not even a local bank. It's an East Coast bank. But
right, most of them
there
are
a lot of conveniences in the modern world, but one thing we didn't touch upon is we have a mailman in our 12-step meeting, and he was talking about how some cities like L.A. have so much business from Amazon that the post office has to contract with other private businesses to deliver all the stuff, otherwise they couldn't handle the volume. So people are lazy, they just sit at home and order shit, and just think of how much money it's costing all these mail delivery services to deliver all this stuff. That's another gluttonous thing that people do.
Right. Well, if you think the credit score is bad, wait till they roll out the social credit score. They already have it in China, where they monitor you.
Well, they do have a website in America that It calculates your reputation based on, like, where you worked, your social media, and other things.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a social credit score system. And once that gets rolled out, you can be depersoned. Like, basically, you can be shut out of the entire economy.
Well, that's pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
why do you think Hong Kong's
when I
protesting?
Applied for, I applied at Target, and they offered me the job at Christmas, and then they rescinded the job offer because of my credit score. But luckily, I didn't quit the other company. It was just a third job, actually, but still, I don't know. So do you guys want to do your conclusions? Because the hour's up now. Would anyone like to
I'm
do
good.
A conclusion tonight?
I'm good.
Well,
I do realize the show's a little more boring than without Don and John. So we're going to have to make it work, even if we're all like fifth cousin siblings that fight. That didn't even make
sense.
Well,
I had kind of a... Then, what is it called? The Neptune Project or something? What was it?
The Venus Project.
Venus Project. So, the Venus Project, one of the things that you read, one of the things that you said was that there was abundance for all, which is a misnomer. There's never going to be abundance for all unless it's an abundance of being poor. And that's what I like about capitalism, even if I haven't made it yet, like in quotations, even if I haven't made it yet in a capitalist economy, there's still an option to be able to. If everything was knocked down to one level, there is no escaping that one level. You're all equal, and whatever that level is where you stay. There's no breaking through it. So it's like being trapped in the lower echelon of society forever. And if you're talking about a resource-based economy, I think we should get back to tying our money back to something real, as opposed to all the things that manipulate the value of our dollar nowadays, whether it's oil.
But there
surplus,
is enough food in the
scarcity.
World to feed everybody. There just isn't the proper distribution.
Okay. Right.
Like, even in countries, like, let's say there's major warfare and the government decides not to take the food that other countries have donated and distribute it. I mean, there are barriers, but I understand what point you're getting at, though.
That's a whole other argument. I mean, there's civilizations that should be farming by now that still haven't figured it out. And it shouldn't be up to countries like ours who mastered farming to be able to supply them with food and water when they've been a civilization for thousands of years and still can't figure it out. I mean, what's wrong with giving them an education, like booklets on how to farm, and giving them seeds instead of
well, that's
like
part
shipping
of what the Peace Corps does, you know. They've been doing it for 60 years.
Okay. Yeah, but it's more beneficial to ship AK-47s all over the place than it is to ship seeds and farming literature.
Well, I agree. On what area of the world are you? Can you give me an example?
Well, just look at the hungriest places. Look at the places that need the most food aid. A lot of them are in Africa. A lot of them are in India. And the wealthy places can actually, the wealthy places that are closer to them could actually do a lot more to help.
I agree.
It shouldn't be just up to us to go everywhere and be everybody's babysitter, because people like me are strained. Like, I work, I have no time for nonsense or fun in my life because the taxes are crazy. But the taxes go, like, if you just add up where all the taxes go, it'll make you upset. Because it just leaves. It just leaves your check before you even get it, and you don't get any benefit of it.
Well, I claim 6 dependents on my check, but it is going to catch up to me. But the thing is,
okay.
The thing is I overheard someone telling me today that him and 7 church members are going to build a house for humanity tomorrow. Like, some people have time for it and some people don't have time to help solve the other world issues. But the guy from Detroit who was on our show last night said that we give millions of dollars in foreign aid, and also our defense budget is $733 billion. So a lot of our money does go out of the country to help others.
All right.
But we might be
doing
it for selfish reasons too. Like, we might want a stake in that country on some level, just like we were talking about on one episode. Yeah, like China, how they're building in the southern part of Africa. Like, they're not just doing it for fun; they're doing it to get something out of it.
Yeah, they need raw material. They need resources.
Right. So, Albert, you guys, I do have to head out because I have my first day of school orientation tomorrow, but thanks for joining us. Does anyone have any final comments?
Yeah, I also have a first day of school tomorrow, too.
Oh, are you going back to college?
Yeah, I'm taking a class at college, so tomorrow is my orientation, too, my first day.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, Ben. And by the time Sunday rolls around, all the co-hosts will all be back on the same page, hopefully. So have a great night, everybody. I'm going to play one of John's songs to end the show, okay? Okay,
all right.
Take care. Globalism and collective problem solving in itself is not evil. it is something that is necessitated by certain elements in the world that demand cooperation. So please bone up on your research before you make false conclusions. That will end the show tonight. Thank you.